Hello, everyone. I'm Kevin Winder, and thanks for tuning in to another podcast of Beyond Everything Radio. And as always, I have a question for you. Do you think you understand divorce? If you're like most people, you probably see it as the very end of a marriage. In today's podcast and post, we continue our journey into the Sermon on the Mount as we reveal the wisdom of Jesus' teaching on divorce. We discover that what most of us think is a marriage is actually a legally binding divorce. Join me now as we see beyond marriage as a power play, and we go deep enough to heal the wounds that keep us entombed in relationships of obligation, anger, or pain, as we discover the true meaning of love and divorce. Hello, everybody. Thanks so much for coming back to yet another podcast of Beyond Everything Radio. I am your host. My name is Kevin Winder. I like to serve the world as an online pastor, author, and uncoach. Welcome to the program. Thanks for all you who are signing up for my newsletter, Winder's Windshield, and all of you who are signing up to the podcast. And I always also want to say thank you to the many, many, many of you that have stayed with me over the years. Some of you have been a part of this newsletter distribution for more than 10 years. And I want to say thank you. Thanks for opening this up week after week and letting these questions that emerge shape you, form you, challenge your existing frameworks and mindset. Many of you who are new to the program are discovering just how this process works. Yes, at first it's like, man, I don't know if I catch everything he's saying. He's putting so much into it. I get it. Stick with it. If this content does not change the way you see the world within a couple of months, then please just unsubscribe and find something that actually does. But I have a feeling if you'll give this real attention, you're going to begin to see beyond everything. That's the whole point. And so thank you again for your subscriptions. Thank you so much for your comments, your letters. If you ever want to get a hold of me, ask me a question, dialogue with me, take issue with something I've said, call me to task, anything you want to do. You can always find me at info@kevinwinder.com. Remember, my website is spelled, my name is spelled like the number 7, Kevin with 2 E's, no I. KevinWinder.com. You can sign up for my newsletter. You can write me. You can check out my content, feedback, anything else that you want to do. KevinWinder.com. Go there today. I'd love to have you interact with you. It'd be great to begin this dialogue. Folks, today we are continuing our Sermon on the Mount series. We come to the topic today called divorce. And the title of today's podcast is called The Divorce We Don't See. It's podcast number 194, The Divorce We Don't See. And let's just talk about divorce, okay? 50% of the world gets divorced, especially in America. And we like to say and think that the church has this recipe for marriage that is better than the world's. And yet we know that the divorce rates within the church and within religion are often just as high or higher than they are in the rest of the world. Those places where the divorce rates are not as high tend to be because it's absolutely out of the question. It doesn't mean that the people live in love. It just simply means that they've adapted to their marriage. And when I worked at the local church, I mean, each church had its own position paper on divorce. Some and most of the churches I worked with, divorce was primarily forbidden. If you were on the edge of divorce, you had to get pastoral counseling, and that pastor would do everything in his power to prevent a rift in the family and in your marriage. And of course, I would understand that. Yes, that's the good work you're trying to do. But so often, it doesn't come out like that. Yes, you're trying to prevent a divorce. You're trying to prevent the erosion of a family, especially if kids are involved. But what usually happens is it's here's chapter and verse. Here's what Jesus said about divorce. Here's why you can't get a divorce. Here's why you need to suck it up. Here's why you need to just toughen it out. That's really the message that comes through. And it really has to do with ego, with saving face, with not looking bad. And if you end up being one of those who ends up getting a divorce, it usually comes with some measure of scrutiny, harsh judgment, right? Your hell is hotter. You've kind of get it, right? In many communities, some denominations, religions, it is absolutely going to mean that you will be excommunicated. You may no longer be qualified to lead your small group. You can't serve as an elder, deacon, or pastor if you have a divorce. And so if you stick in your marriage, then that just simply means they prefer you consigned to a horrible marriage than to actually divorce. And as a result, what you have in some of these kinds of communities is people who all have sucky marriages who want you to have a sucky marriage too, because they figure if I have to suck it up to make Jesus happy, then you should have to suck it up to make Jesus happy. And so we haven't really got very far. We haven't really learned what it takes. So many of the programs that say, hey, this is what a great marriage looks like, this is how you deal with it, is really just about conflict management. It's not really learning how to love. And so my question is why has the church not been able to model for the world what a great marriage looks like? And I think part of the reason is because it sees divorce as a thing, as the very end of the thing. And what we're going to do today is we're going to really explore the wisdom of Jesus' teaching in the Sermon on the Mount about, and it's going to redefine divorce for you. You see, a divorce is a rift. It's a division. It's a split of one thing into two things, right? This is why Jesus' teaching on divorce comes precisely after the teaching on murder and adultery. Now, if you go back 2 weeks, if you go back 3 weeks ago, we talked about murder, right? We talked then the following week about adultery. And those were both the two other areas where we separate the parts from the whole person. And divorce is blocked into the teaching on murder, adultery. So murder, adultery, and divorce all belong together in a group. And these are all talking about the same problem, where we take the whole thing and we break it into parts. See, these are the three explanations. These passages of murder, adultery, and divorce are the explanation of the Beatitude. Remember the chiastic structure, if you go back. These are explaining the Beatitude number 7 in reverse order, right? Blessed are the peacemakers, for they will be called sons and daughters of God. Well, what does that mean? Well, these three teachings on murder, adultery, and divorce explain what it means to be a peacemaker. In Matthew 5:9. See, if we want peace in our lives, if we want peace in your marriage, in your relationships, then there has to be some soul work within us that we have to do. And the problem is, like I said earlier, most of us have a bad definition of divorce. Most people define divorce as the final legal proceeding, after which people just go their way. And that's certainly a part of it, right? This definition, though, is really problematic, as it's just as bad as seeing murder only as the killing of the person. It's the same as seeing adultery only as sex outside of the marriage, right? The apostasion, the certificate of divorce, the word that it uses here, may very well be the final act of divorce, which is ratified by the state, right? It's signed off and says, after this point, you guys are now free to go have other marriages. You're free to go live your life. You're free to whatever. But it's certainly not the divorce that has already taken place. That's the place which God is most concerned. You see, this is the divorce we don't see. We always just focus on the divorce that we do see, which is where the papers are signed. Here you've been served, right? That's when the divorce becomes real, supposedly. But see, what Jesus is doing is he's driving the definition into the heart level, bringing true meaning to it, which is what he's done with adultery, which is what he did with a murder, by saying when you name call, when you call somebody a fool, a raka, you're the murderer. When you lust in your heart after a woman, you've already committed the adultery with your her in her heart. And yes, there's a difference. There is a difference between, you know, name calling and murder and lusting and adultery and the divorce in your heart in the final paper. See, these are all blossoms on the same seed. So they're the same, and yet they're very different. You have to be able to hold that intention, or else all this gets really confusing. So God's concerned with the real divorce, the one at the heart level. This is the whole point of his teaching. You know, you've heard them say, but now I say to you. And whenever he redefines, when he reframes the legal law, he takes it from an external thing and he moves it to an internal thing. That's what wisdom does. Makes you accountable at the deepest part of your soul. And Jesus' definition really reveals how it's possible to be legally bound to someone with whom you are actually divorced. And this precise recipe for a life with no peace. Think about that. How many of you are in marriages where you're really more divorced than married? Like, it stinks. I've been in one of those. I can tell you I have lived through that. It is a life of no peace. It is a living captivity or hell. This is not saying that the legal documents aren't important. They are, right? You need to have those legal documents. The state ratifies the divorce, making it final. The state ratifies your marriage, recognizing your union, your legal union. So yes, it's important, but it's not the heart of it. You see, it's only saying that the legal documents are less important than what transpires in the heart. If you really want liberation and peace, you're going to have to deal with it on a heart level. If you don't deal with it there, forget about trying to solve the problem externally. You'll never find freedom. And the sad state of most married people today is that they are neither free from their obligations to their marriages, nor are they free within their marriages. So they're totally in captivity, and marriage is seen as a burden, an obligation. It is seen as a something that, gosh, I don't want. You get people with commitment phobia because of the way that marriage is positioned in the world and by the way most people hold it in their heart. This is because we over-identify with the institution of marriage. You see, you may not realize it, but your commitment phobia is actually an over-identification with the institution of marriage because you're trying to do everything you can to not be married. It's the same as the person who can't possibly imagine life without being married. So this is idolatry in both directions. And so now let's hear the words of Jesus. I think it's going to kind of bubble to the surface. I'm going to pull little pieces out of this so that you can understand what he's saying. See, this is what he says. It was also said, and this is where he's saying, okay, you're going to the Ten Commandments, right? You're going to the law. This is actually being pulled out of Deuteronomy, but he says, whoever divorces his wife, let him give her a certificate of divorce. But I say to you, that everyone who divorces his wife, except on the grounds of sexual immorality, makes her commit adultery. And whoever marries a divorced woman commits adultery. That's Matthew 5:31. And so from this passage, I think the church kind of goes off the rails. Then Jesus is bringing true meaning to the rules by reframing everything. He's quoting the law that was found in Deuteronomy 24, where a man can basically divorce his wife anytime he finds fault with her. And so he would write a certificate of divorce, and that would release him from obligations to her. But you notice how this is all one-sided. This is not equality for women. The woman is not free to write a certificate of divorce to her husband whenever she found fault with him. She was seen as his property. Right. And he would write a certificate of divorce that would just release him of her of his obligations to her. This left women in a very desperate place. You know, nobody wanted a non-virgin. And so a woman who was divorced was usually forced to lie about being married. And if they did, and then found later after they were married to find that they had been married before, then the husband, of course, would write her a certificate of divorce. So often this would mean that they'd have to resort to prostitution or something else in order to survive. It was a really cruel way to treat women. It was absolute abuse. And it's miles away from the idea of marriage. It's miles away from the idea of union or God's design from Genesis 2:24 of the two becoming one flesh. You see, that's the whole goal, is this drive finds two people attracted and they fall in love and the two become one. That's the marriage. See, the law was striving to preserve propriety, but it actually, the law only invited more adultery and more separation. It couldn't liberate anyone because it didn't equalize the power for the woman. And so this is really important. Because in Matthew 19, Jesus says this. He says, because of your hardness of heart, Moses actually allowed you to divorce your wives. But from the beginning, it was not so. See, he's referring back to this, the two becoming one flesh, right? That's the design, is that there wasn't really a divorce because the two would come together, but because your hearts are hard. In other words, because you're unloving, you don't know anything about love. You know, Moses allowed you guys to write a certificate of divorce. And I just say to you, whoever divorces his wife except for sexual immorality, marries another, commits adultery. What he's saying is that you don't even get it. So, I mean, if you're going to just live in that state of non-love, then just do it. Just write this certificate of divorce. But I'm just telling you that if you do, you're not anywhere close to where you think you are. See, remember, like I said 2 weeks ago, the sin of adultery isn't the sex outside the marriage. I mean, it is, right? That's the blossom on the plant. But the real sin of adultery is dismemberment. It's the same sin as murder and divorce. It's the separating the part from the whole person. See, separating the faulty part is what Moses said you could do. You know, if a man found fault with the woman, he could just write her a certificate of divorce. That means the whole idea of marriage was completely derailed. It was a joke. It was a farce, right? So can you now see the wisdom bubbling to the surface here? The moment we separate the part from the whole, we are divorced already. See, we become adulterers already the moment we separate the part from the whole person. We become murderers the moment we separate the part from the whole person. No, we don't actually commit the offense yet, but the offense is already living within us. See, we may not have actually killed anyone, had sex with anyone, or given the certificate, but on a heart level, we've proven how unloving we actually are. See, a divorce is what fills the void of liberation, love, and equality. So a marriage where one person has the upper hand is actually a divorce. A marriage where one person or both people have to compete for resources, we have to compete for attention, compete for power, that's actually a divorce. You're not in a marriage, you're in a divorce. A marriage where obligation replaces loving compulsion is actually a divorce. A marriage of inequality is actually a divorce. A marriage that holds captive another person is actually a divorce. See, most marriages are actually legally binding divorces. And this is a life of suffering and death at a heart level. And no one, hear me now, nobody has ever divorced someone that they actually loved. I know Some of you are pushing back, but I loved him and they did the wrong thing and now we're divorced and I still love him. No, you don't. You never loved him. You didn't know how to love him or her. That's why you're divorced. And it's, yes, I get it that sometimes it's one side of the other person. No, I guarantee you, the reason there's a divorce at all is because we have not been able to successfully love one another. Because love means that the divorce is impossible. The divorce is the natural byproduct. It's what fills the void where love should have been. See, what you probably had was need or desperation or insecurity or fear or whatever it was. That's what you had driving your marriage. You had emotionality. You had something else. See, love is the remedy and the design. Love is the inclusion of the other, the whole person, all of it. The good, the bad, the ugly, the warts and all. But see, you fell out of love or you said the marriage is incapable of continuing because you're saying, but that part is unallowable. That part I can't accept. That's where I draw the line in my high moral ground. I cannot accept that because God would, God wouldn't accept it, so I can't accept it. Right? You took some high ground. You took some other perspective and pride. And now you're divorced. Right? It's because you didn't love, just like me. See, it's the embracing of the reality that if we look hard enough, we will always find fault. You will always find fault in the other person. As soon as you're looking for it, you've already forsaken love. So we lay down our need to be offended by it. You see, love doesn't need offense. But if you hang on to that thing that you hate or you despise or you don't like about the other person, then you're just relishing in your desire and need to be offended by it. That means you're living in a divorce. You have no idea what love is about. See, love immediately closes any rift of any size because it will not allow the part to overshadow the whole. This is how to become one in the first place, right? When you first were dating and you fell in love, you were overlooking all the faults, right? Why? Because you weren't allowing that part to overshadow the whole thing. Love closed that gap immediately and it was okay. Now, as you got older, you got more annoyed by that part and now that's all you see. And so you're unloving. See, love is how we become one with God and one with the other. Love is the falling. Love is letting go. It's the letting go part, which comes really easy at first. See, we overlook those parts because we want to include the whole person rather than exclude the person. And so later we just retreat into our minds and we cannibalize one another, falling, falling into this hole of frustration and pain and isolation. Falling back in love is just as easy as it was at the beginning. It simply means include. Pride loves offense. Pride loves to be right when the other is wrong. That's the opposite of love, right? You just can't accept that other person's imperfection as if you were perfect. Is there no stain on your life that you're hoping someone could actually love you through? You see, this is how God deals with us. He loves us. And this is how we are to deal with others. We're to love others. This is the golden rule. Love the Lord your God with all your heart, mind, and strength. Love your neighbor as yourself. Right? Psalms 103:8-10 says this, "The Lord is merciful and gracious, slow to anger, abounding in steadfast love. He will not always chide, nor will he keep his anger forever. He does not deal with us according to our sins, nor repay us according to our iniquities." Now, let me ask you, is that how you've treated your spouse, your loved one, the person you date? Do you deal with them according to their sins? If you do, it's unloving. I know this is severe. I get it. I get that I'm being harsh. It seems like I'm picking the wrong team and jumping on the person. But you see, this is why we have to go to the heart level. Each one of us has to own the fact that we don't know how to love. And as a result, we jacked up the definition of divorce. We moved it to the outside. This is the whole teaching in the Sermon on the Mount. But you see, mercy doesn't stop there. Sometimes in a relationship between two people, one person doesn't desire union. Okay? Sometimes a person prefers their isolation. Sometimes a person prefers their anger, their hostility, their oppression, their manipulation, their abuse, or some vice more than peace or freedom and love. And in such a case, these person's sorrows have truly just overcome them. And they do not yet have the capacity to live in love because they want to believe that they are what's wrong with them. And so they just can't turn loose of all of that baggage and bondage. Now, if that's you, or if you're in a relationship or were in a relationship with such a person, the mercy of God does not constrain you to suffer with them unless you are compelled by love to do so. So you're not obligated. You do not have to only have the one valid excuse, sexual immorality, to end a divorce. Remember, sexual immorality, the sin there is the carving out of the part. So if that other person just can't separate and can't break free, you are not constrained to live in that marriage. See, only with Jesus' definition does the certificate of divorce become the empowering act of liberation. See, God's not going to constrain you to a life devoid of love. That would violate his own commandment. See, it brings him no honor to remain in a divorce that's masquerading as a marriage. Think about that. So many times in the churches, they don't have good marriages, but the pastor, because he's a pastor, would never get a divorce. So they just masquerade as if they have a marriage. It's just a parade of divorce. That's not bringing honor to God or the church or anybody. Sometimes the most loving thing you can do for your relationship is open your hand to it. In these cases, a divorce is actually the honest appraisal of the reality of the heart hardened by dismemberment. It's heart hardened by isolation. So often when I counsel people and they're going through trouble in their relationships or in their marriages, I simply expose the fact that they're already divorced. And always, 100% of the time, they all deny it. Everybody, oh, no, we're not divorced. Oh, why don't you just get a divorce? Why don't you just go sign the papers? I always push them to that uncomfortable reality that nobody wants to face because it feels like a failure. It feels like social outcasting. Their fears bubble to the surface. I'm not talking about a divorce here. I'm just saying I'm unhappy, blah, 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 blah. No, you are divorced. And I show them their divorce, and then they push back. It takes weeks and weeks sometimes before the pain allows that reality to set in. See, if we want to live in our own private hell, love actually loves us enough to allow it. See, all hell is really just a three-sided emotional cognitive cage. You can walk out anytime you want. You can become healed and free and liberated anytime you want. But we must want the freedom. We must want authenticity. We must want our real self, and we must want love more than we want the malware scripts that we hoist upon ourselves every moment of every day, convincing ourselves that we're something when we're not. And I know some of you are going to say to me, "Hey, Kevin, whoa, you're allowing way too much space for divorce, and people are going to just run rickshaw with that." Kevin, the Bible says divorce is only allowed for sexual immorality. See, remember, the sin of sexual immorality is dismemberment, like I said earlier. It's exclusion rather than inclusion. You've begun the excluding process, not the including process. It's isolation rather than communion. Divorce, from Jesus' perspective, is not a giving up on the marriage, but rather the holding of a marriage to a much higher standard. See, the reason the church has failed to lead the world in marriage is that its view of marriage is too low by allowing loveless marriages. It thinks staying married is better than having a love-filled marriage. And since it will allow you to stay married and not be loving, the church has way too low of a view of marriage. See, Jesus is essentially saying that if you're not in marriage to completely self-empty and divest in inclusive love for the other person, then just get out and stop pretending. It's better you live celibate than take someone down into your hell of personal control. Ah, but this is where divorce gets really honest. Kevin, you just said something about it's better to just live celibate. Right, that's what Jesus said. And this is why it gets really honest, because we don't want to live celibate, do we? See, this really proves that we really just want sex, not relationships or intimate union. We don't want intimacy. We want sex, right? We want to consume another, not divest in love, right? We want to let our malware scripts have their way in our life, and we want to blame the other person and exonerate ourselves. This is the absolute opposite of loving your neighbor as yourself, right? Because you can always exonerate yourself, and so to love your neighbor as yourself means you would exonerate them as well. But we don't do that. Whenever they screw up, we hold them accountable. And that's why you're divorced. That's why you're in pain now. It'll never heal until you learn to love. See, we reveal that we really know nothing about love, and thus our lives lack any real and lasting peace. We are really, truly poor in spirit. Now, this sermon is about to come full circle. Do you see it? This is how desperate we are. We don't know how to love. We are poor in spirit. So guess what? The good news. You suck as a person. Yeah, I know. I've been hard on you this whole time, telling you that you don't know how to love because you don't. Neither do I. I'm not off the hook here, folks. But this is actually the point of the sermon. It's good news. You see, if you see it, that means you're truly blessed. Because if you go back to the earlier part of the session, when we talked in the Beatitudes, this is what the blessing means. Think about the Beatitudes now, and all that recognition is where this all changes. See, we begin with mourning over our condition of unlovingness. And it's laden with many sorrows. It reveals us to be meek, powerless, not proud and arrogant and mighty. It makes us hunger for the right thing, right? It makes us merciful to others because we can see in them the fact that we suck too. So why are we surprised that they suck? This makes us peacemakers who suffer for doing the right things. I just reframed the entire Beatitudes for you, which are now making sense. They're palpably real in this framework. They're concretized in your life. They are mile markers now on the road to new life. And so the Sermon on the Mount, starting with the Beatitudes, is really unpacking a pathway of new discovery to a new kingdom, a new way to live, where you own your failings as a human and you offer mercy to other failing humans. This is a kingdom where sucky people act through love. We actually make the best kingdoms. That's the design. And now you know the true meaning of this sermon as it has begun to unfold. Now, may we all follow this awareness to where it is leading us.